Brian Kenny spends time with Liam and Annette Cassidy, parents and grandparents. They have lived in Dundalk since 1982. Up to last year, Liam was on the run, having come over the border in secret in 1982 for Republican activities. Against the backdrop of the new peace deal just brokered, Liam and his wife tell their story in this week's documentary On One.
You can look at a gun in two ways. Either it protects you, and if that means having to shoot somebody else who has a gun, that's it.
It was very hard to watch the treatment of people. It was very hard to see things going on. It was very hard watching houses getting kicked in, young children screaming on the street because of what was happening and everything, you know. So it was hard to watch that, and it does change you. It really does change you, because you're saying, well, what can I do to help? So if the IRA come into your area and give you protection, you were taking it, and that's the, and you supported it. And that's the way people felt. That's the way I felt.
Dundalk. Well, the town has changed.
Friday night, Dundalk, early winter. I'm walking with Liam Cassidy to his local.
Involved in tenants' associations and everything else. It's helped change the attitude of people towards people coming down from the six counties. We're going to Cheersborough.
Up until now, my main contact has been with Kevin Mulgrew. He runs an organisation on Bridge Street in Dundalk called Fáilte Ó Bhaile, for what he terms displaced people. People who cross borders.
It'd be a place you seek refuge during troubled times over the years.
Well, you see, you're in between two reinforced banks here.
Yeah.
And it was very hard for somebody to hit you.
Many crossed into Dundalk to escape the troubles. Some in secret, some, like Liam, on the run.
Well, I originally came from Abnamore. I moved into a place called Agamine, which was only a new housing estate, which was nicknamed in the town Little Belfast. I came down here, I was down here in 73. I went back, I was back down again in 75, stayed here to 78, and went back up to Belfast again, and then back down in 82. And I'm here ever since.
Those dates will be important in Liam's story. The burning out of Catholics from their homes in 69, internment and rioting in the early 70s. By 1975, he had moved to Dundalk. Real life intervened for a while, and he fell in love, married a local girl. There are already grey areas around this period of his life, but what interests me most is why he moved back to Belfast in 1978, to the nationalist enclave of Twinbrook, home to Bobby Sands.
And my father, or my grandfather, was in the British Army. My father was in the British Army. But that didn't count whenever 69 came along. Now, I mostly stayed over with my grandparents in Hyphy, and their background didn't count. It was what the war, what religion they were in 69 that got them put out of that estate. An estate that we all grew up in. And we used to go to the 12th of July and everything. And I always wondered, why am I not getting a wee flag?
This fascinates me. I want to know how a man whose father and grandfather were in the British Army becomes an IRA sympathiser. I'm eager to get a glimpse of the reality of life for a Republican during the Troubles, beyond the television images I watched as a child in the 80s. And what events brought him over the border again, this time in secret, 1982, back to Dundalk, on the run.
And I turned around and says, well, these people will be coming, and there's only a couple of chocolate biscuits, so you may go and get something.
I wouldn't be a biscuit person, I wouldn't have biscuits and stuff in the house.
The next morning, Liam and Annette welcomed me warmly into their home. As we drank tea and looked through photos of their children and grandchildren, I looked around and saw a busy family home in the suburbs of Dundalk, with children and grandchildren coming and going, among talk of school plays and communions.
Just not me.
Annette, Liam's wife, who was born and reared in Dundalk, makes a fresh pot of tea.
Well, I sort of would have lost contact with a lot of people then, that because when I came back down then, it was sort of, people sort of, they'd sort of shunned you, like. It was sort of like you changed face, you were wearing a mask, or they didn't recognise you, or things like that, you know. But now, I suppose...
Well, whenever you first came down, there was people that treated you like a hero. Well, and but then there was other people that you were scum.
Yeah, they didn't want to be associated with somebody who had been arrested or been in jail or your name in the paper type of thing.
All these people are still here. Just moved on to a different dimension now. But something that does make me angry now, there was during this peace process, they were dealing with on the runs, and a certain amount of people was had got their papers through, is what we call them. And basically it is, we are no longer interested in such and such a name after this date, but any incidents that will be that happens after this date will be treated in the normal way through the courts, blah, blah, blah. I have friends here in Dundalk that if their mother and father dies, they can't go up for the funeral, they can't cross that lane.
Liam received his papers last year, which means he can now freely travel across the border. Many of his friends with similar pasts are still waiting in hope. He mentions that it may be possible to meet one of these friends at some stage. It's difficult to estimate how many on the runs remain in Dundalk, or when and if the issue will be resolved.
Good morning.
Granny has to
show him
what she said.
That's the quietest I've ever seen you. She's come in and you've seen a microphone and you've nearly died.
What's the microphone for?
Because we're doing a thing on the radio. When you...
The night before, and now and again, Liam mentions 90 miles from Dublin town, the old Christy Moore protest song. We listen to it. After all, Dundalk is only 48 miles from the Twin Brook estate. Understand me polite, the story now I will tell. I'm on the blanket protest,
my efforts must not fail. For I'm giant. It was whenever Kieran Nugent, he was the first blanket man, at dawn there was an LP released. Chris and Moore done a lot of the songs on it, there was our ones on it. That got sold the length and breadth of the country. It seems like yesterday, for 3 days kicked and beaten. For want of a better word, just proud. I like music like that, it tells a story. Sometimes it's better that way to get through to people through song and verse than you get through to people better. But you didn't move back to the north to become involved in the struggle because you were already involved in it down here.
When you didn't move, thinking it was going to be all rosy and nice and everything, you knew that you were going back and the troubles wasn't finished. And
maybe I didn't think it out properly at the time about moving back to Belfast, but to me at that stage it was a natural thing to do and I wanted back home.
Annette's native Dundalk was only an hour away, but their lives moved further away from the normality they'd known here. I wondered again and again in interviewing Liam where that line was, when you would be pushed from a protester, a Republican sympathiser, to more active involvement. How easy was it to cross over?
In the past, the government has set arbitrary deadline.
I listened to a new Northern Ireland unfold over the airwaves. History unfolding, reaching out.
But now, as laid out in our resolution, we as a party have agreed the timing, the setting up of and the working of the institutions of government. Today we have agreed with Sinn Féin that this date will be Tuesday, the 8th of May, 2007.
As the dust settles in Dundalk, the El Paso tag disappears. But to understand the past and the lives of men like Liam, I went back to Belfast with him. In the heart of Nationalist Ardoyne, we called to Big Kevin's house. There, I hear first-hand accounts of what I'd read in disbelief many years ago. Stories that eventually led me to this room. The burning out of Catholics from their homes in Belfast in 1969.
Hello,
I'm a bit of a stranger, aren't I?
Come on.
Yes.
Come in and speak here.
Which one?
Me?
Yes. Look, first part of North Belfast to be shot dead was my phone cousin, Samuel McLaren. About half an hour afterwards, my brother was shot, he survived. And that was 1969. But, let's say, Ardoyne, New Lodge and the old part, it's like a wee island, and it's all surrounded by loyals.
You were a second class citizen in them days, but as I say, Kevin came from an area here that was always oppressed, as where we came from. My grandparents used to live in Lincoln Street, and then they moved up to Highfield Drive, I showed you there on the way past, which would have been classes. Great houses in them days, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's... They... I suppose these days my grandparents would have been called Castle Catholics. No, they thought that we can mix with these people and there's going to be no consequences. God help them, it didn't happen.
That's true.
Well, a lot of people did have to go away down south and, well... They really could do nothing about it, you know, they went there. There was a lot of people went down, they opened up camps down there in Gormanstown and places like that. So when, say, families went, they sort of settled as such, and then they got other, you know, they got houses down there, so they made their lives down there, you know. So, but I remember, it was 1969, I'm 52 now, what age was I? Think about it, about 13, and I remember being in the house. My father coming in and telling us not to go up into the back room. There were only kitchen houses with two wee small bedrooms in them. Me and my brother telling us to get into the back room and not to come down the stairs. And, of course, being 13 and being nosy, he wanted to know what was going on. So we came down the stairs and there was a police tender with a turret on it coming down the street. And it was just stopped in the middle of the street and it swung around the turret and it started to fire out shots. That was before the houses were burned. It was, you know, we couldn't believe that this was happening. And then there was this crowd at the top of the street. Well, to me, they just sort of led them down the street to burn the houses.
And were you shocked that the police would do that, or did you expect it? Or?
The police led them in that night and they done it. We eventually got out then. My daddy eventually got us over the yard wall, and we run down the entry and onto the pad, and we had an aunt who lived in Astoriel Park, so we got up there, my mommy and me and my brother, my father, he stayed, and then the next day, the next day when we came down again, the houses were burned, and it was just awful, you know, to see.
Well. Little did they know by burning innocent Catholics and different things and burning and putting people out and shooting people. Little did the British government and the loyalist murder gangs know that they created the IRA. They created the IRA. In my eyes, they did. Big time. And they opened a can of worms and they just couldn't get the lid back on it again. That was it.
Thank you.
This is Twinbrook now, end to the left.
Twinbrook is an area that is steeped in the history of the Troubles. The place where Bobby Sands lived, amongst a strong nationalist community, including Liam and his family. Twinbrook is several miles outside the city, and in the period when Liam moved here, it would have been seen as the countryside. Many families moved here originally to get away from the rioting and the trouble, but Twinbrook was not immune, and soon the banging of bin lids in the streets to warn that the British troops were in the area was to become a regular occurrence. On those suburban streets, the IRA were known and welcome.
That's where Bobby Sands lived, just here in this road here.
Did you know him?
No, I didn't know him, no. But then, over the hunger strikes, you got to think that you knew every one of them. Very intense day. This is bringing you up now to the house that... This is where young Carl Ann Kelly was killed. This was the shop here. That used to be a house shop. So I was coming out of that, them houses down there, walking up the house shop. Trigger happy Brit hit the chain in the back of the head with a plastic bullet, killed her stone dead. Blood was spouting out of her. Well, I just lived here. You see, there's where the family house is there, that middle house. I don't know where all the implants came from because I didn't plant them. The dandrins I had in, I don't know what they are. But that was a family house there now. So I'll bring you down and show you. We built the monument to Carl Ann Kelly at the bottom of the street. I'm just wondering if it's still there. We'll get out now and haven't been up here. And don't think I've been up here since I left.
You can look at a gun in two ways. Either it protects you, and if that means having to shoot somebody else who has a gun, that's it.
I mean, people, I don't think people can take it into reality. If you let your child out to play, or she goes to the shop and she's coming back from the shop and she doesn't come back, there's someone rapping your door saying that she's lying on the ground in a pool of blood.
It was a very, very intense time because you were going to all the funerals. You were trying to organise protests to stop any more funerals from happening. There was civil unrest in the streets. Wee Carl Ann getting killed and rioting going on at the same time. So it was a shattering time. You were completely exhausted.
We'll be getting watched here anyway whenever we get out of the bus to see what we're at. I'll just bring you down here. We built the monument to Carl Ann down here. I'm just going to have a look and see if it's still here. That's the house there Carl Ann came from. Oh, they put up a better one. See the pictures going out of it? It's just in loving memory of Carl Ann Kelly, aged 12, murdered by the British Army, 22nd of May 1981, R.I.P.
You mentioned that a couple of times. It had a big effect on you, that, didn't it?
It did. See innocent children getting mown down on the street and the establishment turning around and telling lies that there was rioting going on. The child only went out for a pint of milk. No rioting going on at the time at all.
Things like that, would you see them as one of them, you know, crossroads in your life, that incident?
Yeah. Well, it has to have a big effect on you. You remember these things like over yesterday, you actually forget what age you are sometimes. you're still a young fella, yeah. But no, you never, them memories never fade. But at the same time, as I say, an army couldn't have survived without the people, so everybody had a role to play. As Bobby Sands said, no role's too large or too little. Well, we'll get back to the bus. There's probably
probably about 10,000 eyes on us. Who's that?
No, I wasn't a member of the IRA, no. I held guns for them.
The kids would have been at school. Geraldine was a baby. She would have been about 14 months or something around that time, 14, 16 months. I think I was coming back from the shop with her at the time, and I seen all the Land Rovers and armoured cars and all at the top of my street. And it was not like I'd actually ride up close that I seen that they were in my garden as well then.
We were painting an advertisement on the roof, and I got the phone call about 2 o'clock and I had to come back.
I didn't know what was going on. I was afraid that he would come home in case that he would be arrested or something like that as well, you know. And I was scared, yeah. And you don't know what's going to happen, you know. You're sitting and it's just everything, literally everything. And I had like a cupboard underneath the stairs with toys and all that type of stuff all in it as well. They were all pulled out and everything, and the staircase was all pulled out. Wood that was on the stairs was all lifted and all that type of thing, and there was floors pulled up. And that night at about 8:10, and they formally charged, put their hand on the shoulder and said, "We're going to charge you now and we're taking you in for questioning." It was taken to Castlereagh Interrogation Centre.
And that was brought in for the reason that what was in the house. But the reason I was in was just trying to intimidate you from stopping doing things, coming at 4 o'clock in the morning, kicking in the door, searching the house, raiding the house, and then arresting you. So it's, well, everybody went through them sort of things, yeah. But whenever they raid it the second time, it's, sister was a dump in the house, and that was it. It was encased in the kitchen floor. There would have been a sewer pipe, maybe 2 feet wide, which was put straight down into the ground, and a sealed cap. A rubber band on it, a thick rubber band, and whenever you turn the wheel, it expanded and it sealed the pipe there. So it was a dump. That was it. There was rifles in it. I found it, yeah.
And I was taken there that night, and I was put in a cell, and the cell is very, very small, be the size of a bathroom. And it just has like a doctor's bed, and it's chained onto the floor with like a mattress on it, and then like it'd be like a roll of paper that you would use in a dentist, one of those, that's what to cover it with, and a chair that's actually chained as well onto that and put it in, and that's all that's in it, and a light with netted wire around it, no window, just a netted light, steel door, and the light's on constant, so you sort of don't know what time of the day, what time of the night, is it day, is it night, or anything, you know. And you were left there for a while, and then they come and take you out, and you're taken into a room, and you're quizzed and questioned and quizzed and questioned, and you're waiting to see what's going to happen next. Is there going to be a good one, bad one? You really just don't know. And mentally, it's more torture than anything else. You're saying, "I wish you would hit me because maybe I could get over it quicker." Like, where instead of coming and be saying, you don't know when you're going to see your kids again. No, you haven't. You won't get your kids again. Your kids are going to be put into care. Well, I was told that my kids would be put into care. I was also told that my husband would have been having an affair and all type of this type of thing. And then they would throw names at you. Do you know this? And you know, and all this type of thing, and it would be constant just like that all the time, like a mentally type of thing to try and break you into. And you know, yeah, I could understand how some people maybe they'd do things like that and break, because mentally and then physically, you're so drained and so tired. People will say things just for to get out of there or get away, you know. And then it's humiliating as well, because when they move you there, you know, from Castlereagh, like they have to move you for to go for bail. You get in and have a bath and then they throw you a towel. They examine you for marks and all this and mark down whatever, if you have any marks or moles or scars or anything like that. And but it made you bend over, and they would have had a glove on and they would have put their hand up inside you. But it's... well, that was in 1982, so... about 25 years now. And you can still feel... It's something that always stays with you, a memory like that. Like, you know, if you don't feel, you know... And it's not something that you want to talk about. It's not something you want to talk about even when you are out, even to anybody else afterwards, you know. Nobody wants to talk about that type of thing, you know, that because it is degrading, and you feel like you feel as if you've let yourself down in some way as well, you know. So it's a strange thing, but it is in a way to do get to you, like.
You'd have felt guilty about Annette being in jail and you being on the outside. Yeah, you would have felt very guilty about that. But,
though it's 90 miles to Dublin town, it seems so far away.
They gave me a suit. They wanted to give me £200 to get me started down there, but I wouldn't take any money off them. So we just down a suit, just what I stood in.
Remember 90 miles away, I'm still in the edge black sound.
A pinstripe suit, I only wore it once coming down. It's looking back now, I suppose it was a terrible looking suit. But it dressed you up a bit, made you tidy looking. We reached Dundalk about 12 o'clock at noon, and there was actually a police checkpoint just as before you crossed the border. But the car brought me down was a taxi, and I was in a suit, and they just asked our names, and oh, it was low constable and everything else. Do what you have to do. Let us go on then. So we reached Dundalk again at about 12 o'clock, and I went straight round the taxi at the kids were all right. But Annette's mother didn't take too kindly, because it was... So I stayed with her aunt then until we got things sorted out for a house.
Devastated. She hadn't a clue. God love her. She didn't know what it was. She thought it was a hospital I was in as well. You know, she didn't have a clue what it was like, what Castlereagh... She just thought Castlereagh was a hospital, you know, and that there was something wrong with my kidney, and that's why they took me there and all this type of thing, you know. It's understandable for a parent that if you're coming to say, you know, well, your daughter's not in the hospital, she's in an interrogation centre, she's obviously not going to say, well, you're the man of the house, how come it's not you and why is it my daughter, you know, a natural thing, a natural reaction, like.
Just, at the end of the day, we said that if anything ever was caught, it's all me, you knew nothing about it. I was surprised that she did get away, but she bit the rap anyway, and then she came down then to join me with kids.
You're sitting there. You were seeing her shaking hands with Bertie Hearn.
The final time I visit Liam and Annette, they have a visitor. Big Shamey. A friend of Liam's, his papers have yet to come true.
Maybe he's like the rest of us, getting old and he's there to see the light.
We all sit in the front room and watch recent political footage.
Looking forward to a fruitful relationship. I think, given what I've seen of him, obviously it's only been one meeting this morning, I have a sense that maybe Ian Paisley is as much up for this as I am.
Well, that's hopeful.
Something we never thought we would ever see in this lifetime.
It's not about us anymore, it's the next generation. Where they're going to come into, and they're going to come into peace or into war. At the end of the day, everybody wants peaceful. Nobody wants their children going out into a war situation.
I'm impressed at how optimistic Ned and Liam seem. Even their friend, Big Shamey, an IRA man, still on the run.
So you came down here at 16, that's a long time ago.
It's a hell of a long time ago.
Were you on the run then?
I came down here on the run. What happened was, the tournament was on the go. As few as moved down, myself and the bra came down here along with two other boys. When the tournament was over, we took a decision who was going to go home first because we knew the tournament was over. And they walked in and says, it's not you want, it's your bra. So, in other words, it's me that they wanted, but they didn't say what for. So, ever since that ice day south of the border.
Ever since
he's at home, families, the whole lot.
And what made you so sure over the years that, you know, it wasn't just an off-the-cuff comment or it was that serious? What makes you so sure that they really, even, you know, 72, 82, 92, what makes you so sure even when the ceasefire
happened? They never stopped asking. That's the question. The army, the rest and family members, oh, you're brave to sudden touch. Oh, we'll get our hands on him and all, you know.
And what was it thereafter for? That there was, so, was it, seemed like a, coming from me, from what you're saying, it sounds almost like it was a personal thing.
What happened was, you see, we were down here at the time. Well, I don't want to say it, but we were doing certain things down in the south at the time. It was, I'll tell you what it was. It was a training camp, you know.
And your brother and yourself were in the same, doing the same thing.
Same.
So, have you any inclinations to why they picked you?
I don't, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I could name a whole lot of things, and it could be off the mark altogether. Like, you know what I mean?
It sounds like a personal thing. You know,
it's not personal. Like, that's the way they worked at the time. Like, you know what I mean? They just picked one of the family and they stuck to it. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying I was never active, don't get me wrong, I was very active at one stage, even in the north. Maybe that's the reason why, you know. But
That's 35 years ago.
That's a hell of a long time ago.
So you're, since that phone call, you were told you haven't been able to go back for time.
I haven't, no. I know that when my late father died, I was in jail in the south at the time, and couldn't get to the funeral. The army was still at the funeral. The army and the police were still surveying the funerals and all, you know. That was in the 80s.
And
early
you were
80s.
In jail.
I was in jail, yeah.
Do you mind if I ask you for a while?
I'd rather not say, you know what I mean. But I was not the only one that happened. It happened to a whole lot of people. You know what I mean? There is men, generally men down here. Like myself, I've made their lives down here. What happened to us now is, even though we're living down here, is the south of Ireland, we can go anywhere in the south of Ireland, it's become like our own tournament camp. We can't go back to our hometowns in the north. Because we do, we'd be arrested. It's kind of like a Stalinist version of exile in the Gulag. We out in Siberia type of thing. That's what it looks like. If I want to, I could, in a car now, go to Newry, walk around and back out within a half an hour, hoping I don't be arrested. But I don't want to be like that. I want to be fit to go out. I want to go down to Newry, on the bus, walk around the town, don't care who I see, stand talking to everybody, policeman will walk past me. That's it. He's no fear of me, I have no fear of him. I can hop in the bus, go back, live in the dock, live a normal life. You know? Just let the men have the right to go home if they want to go home. You find out most of the men are on. Well, they just want the right to go home. Most of them are back living in the south.
The people that you know that are on the run that haven't got their papers, do you think any of them
will go home to live permanently in the north? I know one or two would, but the majority, no, it's just the right to travel up and down.
Because it's too late, really, for them.
Too late, yeah. They have family down here. Most of them are married. And have family down here. And the families grew up here and have grandchildren and all. You know what I mean? That's how long the conflict lasted. When you become a grandpa down here, you know really that you have no ties anywhere else, only where your grandchildren are. Your children and grandchildren. And that's just basically what happened.
How many miles are we now from the border about?
It wouldn't be that much. It would be about 15, 20 miles.
Do
You're 15, 20 miles and you can't go
that way. You can't. That's just weird. Going anywhere south, just can't go north. Like, there's that part of it too, like, you know, I think it's kind of a punishment.
Like, I was talking to Liam there a couple of weeks back and he was talking about when he got his papers.
Mm.
And he said he was kind of aggrieved about it because he kind of went, who did I didn't ask anybody to get my papers.
Yeah, I know. He said, he was actually, I have something to tell you. I'll tell you some other time. And he says, what's wrong? He says, I got my papers. I mean, Jesus, great, I'm delighted for you. I feel like a traitor. For what?
It must have been hard for him to tell you then.
It was, because he knew me. He's known me for years, like, you know.
At the end of the day,
it'd be a relief, not to me, but to the rest of my family. You know, my sister's not that I can go down now. Half the times, my nieces and nephews didn't know me. I was using a different name. I thought it was just an insurance man or something coming to the house. That's just the way it was. Kids were never told who you were. At the present moment, I even talking to you here, if some of my nieces would be listening to this, even my grandchildren, don't know nothing about me. Because I don't tell them what I've done or what I didn't do, what I am, what I'm not. They just see me as a granddad or just as an uncle. Know nothing about my life at all. You know what I mean? Less they know about me, less they have to deal with.
So right now, I mean, it's 2007.
2007.
It's April and it's still affecting you that life.
Still affecting
you,
yeah.
You're going around almost secretly.
Secretly again. Very few people know. You know what I mean? You don't tell anybody who you are, what you are. You just let it go.
Even now?
Even now.
Myself and Shamie go back in to join Annette and Liam. Together we watch Ian Paisley drive into Farmley, Dublin to shake hands with the Taoiseach.
Can't wait to get into it, he's half rubbing.
And that is a good warm handshake.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, it's a big change from the mass. He's calling everything under the sun. And he's doing the exact same thing, like, you know, it's the so obvious you get them for doing.
It's
this. I am proud to be an Ulster man, but I'm also proud of my Irish roots.
Astounding stuff from Paisley.
I mean, it really is historic, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
You know,
it's
and from the... To stand there in front of all the media and say, this is my new neighbours and all now. You know,
back years ago, you said Paisley be talking down here, talking and shaking hands with a teacher.
It's never amazing. Said, like, you know. You didn't think you were going to ever see it.
You know. So, was he going to take any of the Devil's Buttercup next?